We have some time left this afternoon that we wanted to open up the floor to discussion and questions and answers at this particular point. Obviously, the questions are at your end, and the answers we'll leave with Dr. Mintz. We have placed a microphone up at the front here in order to allow everybody to hear at the same time, and so I'll open it up to Randall for the first question.
My name is Randall Palmer, Reuters. Do you have any sense as to whether Mr. Flaherty, Mr. Harper, or the caucus are inclined to go along with this? Other than with the modest, very modest thing to seniors with pension splitting, but is he inclined to do this for the $4 or $5 billion a year?
Well, the $4 or $5 billion is a question mark how you introduce the income splitting. When I was mentioning the first approach where you don't go the full way, but maybe you put some limitations, you can actually cut that expense down. And so that's why I didn't want to zero in on any particular cost to the program. I guess it's a question really of what the government is able to do at this point. I know that there's a number of people in the government caucus that is interested in moving in this direction. I know that there is some debate about going there at all, and especially at a time when, you know, the economy looks like it's slowing down, and the federal government has to be careful with its own budget projection and whether it goes into the deficit, whether this is a time to introduce it. On the other hand, you could start elements of it and expanding basically the approach that was done for pension income splitting, and whether there will be any interest in the government to do that, I'm not sure. I haven't talked to them about it. In fact, I don't do that sort of thing, but I just like to get the ideas out and let people think about it.
I certainly don't want to speak for the government. I know there's a lot of interest on the part of a number of classes.
John Robson, Ottawa citizen. I'm curious to know, first of all, how much variety is there among OECD countries that do this and how they define family? And secondly, as an expert in taxation, do you think that the way that family is defined is essentially adequate, or might we want to include, you know, the widow person supporting elderly parents, siblings living together, that sort of thing?
Well, those are good questions. Right now, of course, you know, Canada has a certain approach. In fact, you know, one of the things that we've done is certainly understand the difference between a single parent family and a full two earner family. In fact, if you look at the equivalent to spouse deduction, it's called exactly that, the equivalent to spouse deduction, because if you're a single parent family, you can claim the equivalent to spouse deduction if for your first child, and not just in the case of two spouses that are working. So we've done a few things like that to recognize different types of families. Certainly there's some interesting social issues that one has to think about, how far you extend the family notion. I'm not an expert on exactly what all the OECD countries do in terms of doing that. So one of the questions, of course, is containing the cost, because you have to make, this is the important thing about any tax system at all, is that you can't have a definition that is so loose that everybody starts claiming their family deductions. And so as a result, you end up getting a huge revenue cost to governments as a result, because even though people may have a very limited relationship, they don't do it. So one does these things in steps. Another example, by the way, is registered education savings plans in Canada. Grandparents can contribute to that. So there are some areas where we've expanded the definition of family, going beyond just the traditional notion. But I think those are partly become not just a question of justice and how you define families, but also a question of revenue costs and how far you want to extend the notion.
Well, yeah, I just don't want to follow up. So a very interesting sociological definition of biological families, people share a stove of them. But if you should make the tax benefits available, that basically would change their cooking arrangements.
Yes, and taxpayers are brilliant at working around these things, I can tell you every time.
Great. Thank you very much for hosting this at the Institute, and to you, Dr. Mintz, for your work on this. Our government has already started to move towards family tax fairness, having eliminated the marriage penalty by increasing these household deduction to the same level as the personal exemption, and by providing the child tax, sorry, the universal child care supplement, which is taxable in the hands of the lowest income spouse. So in the case of stay-at-home parents, they pay no tax on it at all. But I point to a recent study by Vanity Institute, which asked parents if money was not a consideration, which option would they most prefer for raising their kids? And it gave them five options. One was an institutional child care space, a neighbor or friend, a family member, or having a parent stay at the home. And far and away, the stay-at-home option was the most popular, and by far and away, I think it was somewhere between 85 and 90%. We know, therefore, that there are people who are not able to make that choice because they can't afford to, given the tax considerations. So my question to you is, given the debate about the need for more child care spaces, and given that many of those spaces are currently being occupied by families that would rather have the child at home with a stay-at-home parent, if this policy were instituted, do you think that the resulting decision of families to keep a parent in the home and keep to get out of the child care space might actually free up more daycare spaces for parents and families who need them?
The answer is yes, and the reason for that is that the only other thing that could affect is the number of children you have that could be affected by the policy. In other words, in the long run, you may actually have more fertility as a result. That increases the aggregate supply of children, which I don't think will be that large enough to make that point. I do want to point out that I think it's not just an issue of what parents want, but also what's important for society. And some of the recent work that's been done looking at the experience of children in various situations when they're being raised, certainly many families, in order to cope, have had to have both parents working or for choice reasons they wanted to do it, and perhaps that was actually the best arrangement for themselves as well. But there has been some evidence to show tax policy can have an impact on those kinds of decisions. I had a student, Kevin Milligan, who is now teaching at University of British Columbia, who did a wonderful study on the Quebec $7 a day child care program. And what he pointed out was, of course, it did give greater access for parents to work because they were able to get their child care expenses covered. But he also found, and much to a lot of controversy, but it was based on Statistics Canada data, that the children who were in daycare did have some more negative results in terms of ability to, more security and things like that. This is based on the actual data that was done. In fact, this paper is now been published in the journal Political Economy, or it's just coming out, which is actually one of the top economic journals in the world. It's actually a very, very well, very carefully done study. It was very controversial when it was published in Canada through the C.D. Howe Institute a few years ago as a debrief on the paper, because it did, I think, raise some very difficult questions, I think, for many parents. Because, these choices about working or raising children at home are very difficult ones, and important trade-offs have to be made by every parent in doing that. And, of course, the experience, of course, can vary quite a bit across families in terms of what actually happens. But I think those kinds of, that kind of work, I think, does need to be considered, I think, in terms of implications, I think, for the long run, which we don't know about enough yet, I think, in Canada, to understand the longitudinal issues that are going to be involved for families over a long time. In fact, in the United States, there's some wonderful data looking at generations of families, and they can get a better idea in terms of how things like divorce rates and all sorts of other things can impact on the experience of the next generation and the following generations. We don't have that kind of data in Canada, and I think it's something that we need to develop more of, because I think it's very important to understand some of the social dimensions of our various policies and what impacts that they can have on society in general.
Jack, as Ken Rosenthal has asked me, my capacity as a research fellow at Canada West, European Development Institute, I was going to suggest that there's a fourth way hearing this between couples and families, and that's what Alberta has done. Alberta has perfected this way because they have a large personal deduction for each parent, and they have a single rate of tax above that. So it really doesn't matter who earns the income, you pay 10%. And so Alberta has achieved nirvana, if you will, which is a large personal exemption per payments way and a single rate across all incomes. So you get efficiencies and you get payments way. And I know you expect me to come here and say this. But I think that that's a, for those policymakers in the room who are looking at ways to split income, doing it that way doesn't require us to make a lot of adjustments to the income tax code. Other than getting to a single rate. Getting to a single rate is relatively difficult for this department, certainly we did there, but I do think it's important that we recognize that a single rate tax with a lot of personal and spousal exemptions is a perfect income split.
I think it's. I think the point Ken you raise is absolutely correct. That there's no question that the flatter your rate structure is, the less important it is to do income splitting. There's no question about that. I'm using my argument about moving towards family taxation based on the idea that you won't get there entirely. And even in Alberta, despite the single rate, and I totally agree with you, it does minimize the need for income splitting. We have to remember that certain clawbacks of benefits and things like that actually lead to some variation in marginal tax rates across individuals. But I do agree that the issues are less important in Alberta than, let's say, some other provinces. I'm under the presumption that we won't be giving up our progressive rate structure in Canada, at least in the near future. I haven't seen it since 1917, and I don't think we'll be doing it that quickly in the future either.
You mentioned during your talk that joint filing would be more costly to the government than income splitting. Can you explain why that is?
Well, because I think on income splitting, if you want, you can actually put some limitations on how much you want to transfer. So it gives you more flexibility in how much revenue cost you want to incur. That was mainly that point. Right. Well, if you did it perfectly, yes, I agree. Yeah.
In terms of the international comparison, the upper 9 countries that have some sort of formal family
taxation.
If you turn on the nations with a single tax rate or additional 20 actually, so you see that it becomes by far the majority of the man's international nations permit income splitting is true, joint filing or single tax rate.
Yeah, no, that's a good. Fair point.
Thank you also for that answer.
Okay.
There's a bunch of issues when splitting income that we deal with every day in policymaking. Number one, we can try to emphasize, and touch on that.
Sorry?
Trying to emphasize, and you touched on that already. One particular area would be the family unit breakdown, and if you consider a lot of that, especially if there's child sharing involved, and also the
That's actually true. In fact, I was I was working in finance at the time that we changed the whole alimony situation, where instead of having a deduction given to the higher income parent spouse and then the income being declared by the low income spouse, that we didn't allow the deduction, and of course there wasn't an income inclusion for the low-income spouse, and of course the big winner of that was the government that got more tax revenue. So it was an interesting process and policy, because you had a lot of groups that were actually arguing for the system that was eventually adopted in Canada, and even though the government was a big winner of the whole thing in terms of more revenue. The point you raise is correct. There's a number of various elements in benefit systems as well, which do recognize family. I was talking about the specific tax provisions, but I'm, there is quite a long list of various family treatments, and I agree.
Well, I mean, there's tax credits for
Yep.
Yep.
And actually, when I mentioned the transfer of credits, one of the things, of course, is the tuition fee and education cost transfer to a parent and to a spouse.
When we're talking about implementing new taxes and whether it has an impact on revenue, and if program spending has to cut it, we consider counterproductive the damage that are investing in this job here and the fiscal on pay, and what the expense of this, or in your opinion, what other programs might you see a drop in spending, keeping in mind the efficiency in parents?
Okay, right. Actually, you raised a very interesting issue, and that is, are there some things that you, if you did go to a, let's say, a family approach, maybe you don't need certain things that are operating in the system right now that could save you some money. Now, I'm not sure the child tax benefit will do it necessarily because it's a very important support program for very low-income families, particularly the highest poverty incidence rate is often a single mother with children at home, and the difficulty of not getting enough support to work and to work and to go out and work, and the difficulties that a parent might face, especially when you have to have child care and all the other expenses associated with that. And there's no question that the child tax benefit program has relieved significantly for many very low income households. The cost that they incur just to try to live, and so I'm not sure one can necessarily, at least I haven't given much thought to it, but I'm not sure that's going to be a program that one would want to cut back, because we've introduced income splitting or family taxation that I think is more important at the middle income level for many families. But certainly I haven't given it a lot of thought. I think it's a really good point. That maybe there are some aspects in the tax system that you could actually make some changes where income splitting becomes more affordable for that reason, but I think there still would be some sort of cost associated with it. Sorry? Well, I guess, maybe this, even at my age, I guess, United States, I've always known to have joint filing, so I'm not quite sure, when the change was actually brought in. So I have to admit, I don't know the history of the situation. I know that Germany made a change in the past 15 years, where their system was more similar to the French system. And then they changed it to joint filing, which is now like the American system. But I don't know what the implications of that was for the tax system. I do know that in Germany there's been, in the past 10-15 years, a very significant reduction in top marginal tax rates in terms of the personal level and the corporate level during this time. But they've been undertaking all sorts of other reforms, which raises an important question that sometimes one can make or can make family taxation, let's say, more affordable or income splitting more affordable if we get after some of these other aspects of the tax system, which do cost money but are maybe very ineffective incentives. And I have a whole list of those things, which I'm sure Mr. Albrecht would love to have as his list. But I talk about labor-sponsored venture capital credits. I talk about lifetime capital gains exemptions. I can go through a number of items that all cost the government revenue. And yet, I will seriously raise questions with respect to their effectiveness in terms of what they're doing for the Canadian economy. And therefore, items that certainly with base broadening, you could afford doing other things instead. So I could give a few ways of paying for income splitting if we wanted to go in that direction without necessarily having it come out of the surplus of the federal government.
Right.
Well, first of all, the notion of efficiency is also based on how people want to live their lives. So it's not just a matter of what it contributes to GDP, but it also means to their own standard of living or their enjoyment that they can get out of the time that they spend, as well as the income that they generate. So that's, you know, and to the extent that tax systems distort those decisions, then that's going to create a cost on what on people in terms of what they want to do. And so that's one point I want to make. It's not all just a matter of dollars. It's also a matter of how people can best enjoy their lives. That's important. In terms of the efficiency arguments, there are some negatives, because you could increase the marginal tax rates on the top incomes, because everybody's income is aggregated in that case. Because even with income splitting, you're putting more income in the lower income household, member of the household with the lower income, and so you're increasing the marginal tax rate on that person. So if they decide to go out and spend another hour of work, of course they're going to end up paying more tax, and that's an efficiency loss. On the other hand, for the other spouse, you're lowering the marginal tax rate, and you can actually increase efficiency. And this goes really to the flat rate point that Ken Bozenkohl raised, is that if you actually did have a flat rate, or you move towards a flatter rate tax system, and there's a number of studies that have been done in the United States and Canada and elsewhere on this, you can actually increase the efficiency of the tax system, because you end up lowering the marginal tax rates, really high marginal tax rates on one income, on one spouse, as opposed to the other spouse. So flattening actually will increase efficiency in that sense, which is a point that people often forget about in thinking about the overall system. Another question, which is goes back to the whole issue of the lifetime perspective of many households, and that is if you have a tax system that, let's say, forces people to go out and work when they really don't want to work. Now, you could say, well, that's good because we're going to increase GDP because they're going to go out and work. But you may actually cause other problems instead. You know, going back to the fact that maybe for some people staying at home, there may be some very important contributions they're making in a different way, whether through the voluntary sector or raising children at home, which could be important too. What the efficiency gains are and everything associated with that, I think, need to be better understood. But certainly, you know, you can actually make some arguments all in those directions, if there is some economic cost associated when you create these kinds of differential taxes that are on different types of households, or types of households and decisions that are made vis-a-vis working or doing something with their time in an alternative way.
Last chance. Well, it looks like we've dispelled the myths and added to the contribution of the debate.
I'm not sure.
Jack, thank you so much. On behalf of Carol, Jack, I'd just like to thank you on behalf of all of us. I'd like to thank you on Harold for sponsoring this event today. As we can tell, this is an issue that is needs to be in the public square. It needs to be discussed. There have been some great questions that have come forward here and around the issue. We often think about social policy being over here and fiscal policy being over here, and never the twain shall meet. This is a great example of where they intersect, where fiscal policy will influence social policy and vice versa as well. And so I'd like to thank you for your presentation today, for the information you brought forward, for putting this back into the public square in a very large way. We have a few more minutes that we don't have to rush out of this room, and so if you have individual questions or would like to speak to one of the IMFC staff, just remember that tag with a nice orangey pinky dot on it. You'll spot us right away. If I haven't had a chance to meet you, please just stop past. We'll swap business cards in that traditional manner and meet each other. I'd like to thank each of you for coming today. Thank our translators for the work that they've done here in the booth as well. And with that, we'll bid you adieu, and thank you very much for coming today.